Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Monique Coven. I'm the host. I'm a certified trauma recovery coach. I've worked for over 25 years as a social worker, and I'm a survivor. The Trauma Healing Podcast is for those who are healing trauma and finding ways to navigate through this messy, uncomfortable, and challenging recovery process. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information to validate, inspire you, support you on your healing recovery journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors, trauma experts, and trauma therapists in the field that will provide information on effective trauma healing modalities, tools, techniques, skills, all in hopes of helping you heal. If you'd like to find out more information on trauma recovery healing, please go to my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. I also have an Instagram and Facebook page at cptsdcoach. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. We're going to be talking today with psychologist Allison Cook, and we're going to be talking about boundaries with parents. And this is a challenging conversation and topic for many of us, because the fact is that we've often had no boundaries in childhood. And so a lot of the patterning that we learned follows us into adulthood, and we often find ourselves ridden with guilt, yet feeling like we shouldn't feel guilty, know that we shouldn't feel guilty, yet we do. So this whole conversation is going to be about boundaries with parents, and we're going to be exploring different aspects of that. So I loved my conversation with her, and I hope that you find it helpful as well. You can support this podcast for the equivalent of a cup of coffee by clicking on the link in the show notes at buymeacoffee.com/healingtrauma. Your support will help keep these trauma-informed episodes coming. Thank you for supporting this podcast. Hi, Allison. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Monique. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I'm really looking forward to talking with you about a topic that is a lot of survivors struggle with this. And I remember the first time I heard the term like parentification or I don't know if I'm pronouncing right. Parentification.
Yes.
Or the parentified child. Yeah. I was like, that sounds lovely. And so many people have had that experience. And so I thought maybe first we could start by you telling us what is a parentified child.
Sure. I remember the first time I heard it as well, kind of just, it just kind of pinged at me. And I didn't know then what I know now in terms of how it related to my own life and just how incredibly important it is. But essentially, the term parentification just means that as a child, there was a role reversal. And that the parent, a parent's job is always to guide the child. There is a power differential there. The parent's job it's not a two-way relationship in that sense where, you know, the child's supposed to take care of the parent equally, let alone parent the parent. And so what parentification simply puts a name on is this psychological phenomenon. It happens fairly frequently where a parent abdicates their responsibility to nurture and care for and support the child, and instead asks the child to care for him or her. And the child doesn't know that this is not right. Right. Because we look to our parents to parent us. We assume that what they're doing is right. And so we don't realize that our parent is completely undermining that normal process by asking us to take care of their needs, whether that's emotionally, physically, you know, mentally, whatever the case may be. It manifests in a lot of different ways. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. It's just where there's this role reversal where as a child, you were asked to take care of your parent in ways that were very unhealthy.
Yeah. And not asked in the term of, you know, in the terms of will you be, but it's really so subtle, like, you know, coming to them for advice and maybe talking about things with their, you know, about their father or mother, you know, or sharing maybe some sexual stuff that's just not appropriate. And I mean, there's a million and one different ways that, like you said, it's often not really recognized, it's not often recognized because they don't know any other way.
Yeah, you don't. As you become an adult, you think you might even get a nice feeling out of taking care of a depressed parent, realizing that you can get some self-worth, you can get love from a parent. And again, no shame on the parent that's struggling, right? I want to be very clear about this. I don't want to shame parents. We've all been, you know, we all have hard days as parents, right?
Yes.
We all, you know, sometimes are like, oh man, my kid just cheered me up. And that's awesome. That's a very different thing. This is a more subtle kind of, as you said, insidious, and it can be much more overt and much more subtle where you're sort of making the child's primary job to meet your needs. And it's just not okay.
Yes.
And as a child, you might feel good. Like I said, you might feel good about that. You might be like, wow, I feel great when I twist myself inside out to make my mom love me. And that, as you get older, really messes with your self-esteem, with your sense of worth, with your ability to have healthy relationships, healthy two-way relationships with other people, to individuate in a healthy way, to become your own independent person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's so many things that can... I think one of the big things that comes to my mind, and I hear this with my own clients, and I had it myself, is this, if we're primed very early to feel like we have to take care of their needs, it stays with us. And so we still feel overly responsible for, you know, maybe our previously abusive parents still feeling responsible for their needs to take care of them, for their feelings, to figure out their problems. And that kind of thing. Yeah.
It becomes your primary identity as that of caretaker, as that of giver. And again, what's hard about it is it can really be traumatic when it happens.
Yeah, it can. And so you started to talk about, and I was wondering, maybe you can elaborate even a little more on what are the effects that it has on us as we become adults?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, we become sort of blended, to use a terminology from the internal family systems model, which is the one I operate out of therapy, where you become blended with a part of yourself. You become blended with a pleasing part of you. You become blended with a part of you that needs validation from other people. You have a hard time understanding your own experiences, your own emotions. You lose connection with yourself. And so you don't know how to receive care. You don't know how to ask for what you need. You don't know how to get help, right? One of the most fundamental things a parent does is teach us the limits, the boundaries of our physical, emotional, and mental personhood, right? And so when that gets blurred, we don't know that those boundaries, we don't even know what exists inside of those boundaries, let alone how to set them and let alone how to ask for what we need. And so it just leads to a lot of problems in our relationships, a lot of problems in our sense of self, our sense of worth. It's just a really, you know, I see it all the time. There's a sort of invisibility to it. You know, I'll work with a lot of women who just talk about this vague feeling of feeling invisible, feeling unseen. And it's these parts that have just been locked away and never really called into being witnessed and being valued just for being you.
Yes, yes, right. What are some of the signs, would you say, that our moms and dads are guilt tripping or manipulating us, would you say?
Yeah. So let's see, as an adult, where it first shows up is you might notice resistance inside. And here's how I hear it is, mm-hmm. I my mom, you know, I feel so bad that I don't want to spend time with my mom, you know? And so that for me is a big, mm-hmm. like, let's unpack that. So why don't you want to spend time with your mom? Well, she always, you know, it's never enough. I can never please her no matter what I do. She needs more. And these are these cues that I hear that, you know, somewhere that mom is getting needs met from this adult now, mm-hmm. that were never that yours to meet, that were never yours to meet. And so those kinds of things, that's the more subtle form, sort of the guilt tripping, overstepping boundaries, you know, just feeling free to weigh in on how you're raising your kids or how you're living your life or how you're doing your job, how you wear your hair, you know, just some of these sort of a disregard for your autonomy, your individuality. All of these are cues that, again, someone will come in and kind of have this vague sense of, I this annoys me, but I feel like I'm bad. I feel like I'm bad that I feel this way about my parents. That's usually how it shows up. And it's sort of like, well, let's unpack that. It may well be that there's a way in which you've been hurt and there's a reason you're feeling like you don't want to spend time with this person, why you're feeling resent, why you're feeling anger. Now, again, we don't have to like go on this, you know, bandwagon to shame all the parents. There's a lot of different ways to establish healthier boundaries. But until you understand what's happened to you and can name it, it's really hard to heal from it.
Yes, yes. And often I think that they would maybe just disregard the feeling inside of them. Like they know they don't feel good, but I have to see them. They're my parents or something like that.
That's exactly right. There's a helplessness. Right. You know, this is what's expected of me. Another one mm-hmm. I'll hear is, you know, parents feeling envious or possessive, constantly wanting more time, just being unpredictable, not really showing up, but then calling you again, you know, if there's an addiction or if there's a mental health crisis, calling you and expecting you to be there. These kinds of things, again, where it just stirs up, it's such a fundamental relationship, you know, that umbilical cord, we were literally connected, right, to our moms. So it just stirs up this, a lot of chaos inside and a lot of guilt. And again, those are all cues. They're signals to pay attention to go, what is that about? Why do I feel that way? Why don't I feel the way the Hallmark card tells me I feel, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And to listen to that. But I think often many people are not used to listening because they've shut down for so long.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So how do we set healthy boundaries with our parents as adults?
It's a great question. And I hear it a lot because there is that tie, you know, because it's sort of that fundamental relationship where it's really hard. We're so susceptible to what our parents think about us, to their criticism, to their judgment. We don't want to experience that for very, very good reason. So we protect ourselves. And a lot of times the way we protect ourselves is by keeping them happy. So a lot of the work is around just peeling back the layers of those protective mechanisms, right? What are the things I do that I'm not even aware of to try to make mom happy, to try to just keep her off my back, or to keep dad from yelling at me, from going off at me, from shaming me? What are the things that I do? First, just becoming aware, awareness. You know, before we're going to try to change anything with them, we're going to just, that's what I do. Oh my gosh, I just noticed it. I completely just shut down and won't talk about those things because I know that mom won't like it. And I just want to make her happy, get off the phone. You know, and so just becoming aware, and then you can start making some subtle changes. And it's giving yourself permission. Wait a minute, I'm an adult now. I'm not 8 anymore. This person feels like they have ultimate power over me because at one point they did, you know, they don't anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm an adult now. I can choose to do it differently. And then there's a whole array, there's a whole spectrum of ways. You know, I talk about boundaries and relationships with parents on a spectrum. You know, there's the healthy kind of Hallmark card version that you know, is rare. And then there's the just completely abusive, almost completely toxic, where you really need to just completely cut off contact because it's so toxic. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole lot in the middle, right? It's sometimes the middle that's the hardest, because it's like, well, she's pretty good at this, but this and this are just awful, right?
Right.
That's the hardest for people. Mm-hmm. So we just starting to really talk about that. And I'll say, what can, you know, when in that category of folks, I'll be like, what can you say yes to? Well, she's actually pretty good with my kids. Okay. So that feels okay to you, but I don't want to be alone with her. You know, so you start to get mm-hmm. really granular in a way around what can and can't you do. What are the mediums of communication that work okay? What are the topics of communications that are off limits? And then to empower yourself to put some of those parameters in place. And it's hard. It's really hard, but it's also really rewarding mm-hmm. work.
Yes. Yes. And so how a lot of people also feel a tremendous amount of responsibility. You know, they've always felt responsible for their parents, but what happens when their parents actually do have like concrete yeah. needs? Let's say they are elderly and there's nobody else. And so what do you think is their responsibility to aging parents?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. And I notice it coming up a lot, especially with the pandemic. You know, folks are like, gosh, my parents are completely alone. And what do I do? And and I think this is where just that inner work of really figuring out what can I say yes to. So instead of thinking about all, you know, all the ways that you all the things you can't and maybe shouldn't do, depending on the level of toxicity, what can I do? And so some examples and feel good about, right? Feel like I'm not losing myself. I'm not exposing myself to a toxin, but I'm also caring for this person that for, you know, whatever nature of our relationship did bring mm-hmm. me into the world, you know, they did give me life, you know, and sometimes it just gets as brass tacks as that. And so it's so different for different people. It could be, I'll write my mom a letter every month and I'll put it in the snail mail and I'll, you know, and there's a way in which I've worked with clients who they're keeping her in their, in relationship, but they're not actually exposing themselves to some of the stuff that's been really toxic. Other folks, you know,
Wait, let me stop you there. What does that look like?
By only making the communication one way, like I'll send a letter in or I'll send photos through the aid wherever they're living.
Okay.
Right. But I'm not going to mm-hmm. actually show mm-hmm. up and have, you know, have communication. So I'm not cutting them out. I'm sort of giving them this, you know, maybe it's pictures of the grandkids or maybe it's, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. very, very basic, but I'm not going to actually give them a say. I'm not going to hear back from them. Does that make sense? And that's,
yeah, it does. It does. And I actually know people who've done that.
It's hard, but it's, mm-hmm. but it's also kind of negotiating with yourself, right? This is how they're maybe in a home. They have nobody. I feel terrible if I don't do anything, but I can't go visit them. So this is one of the mm-hmm. things I'll do. And then just down to things like, I won't be alone with a parent. I've got to use a buddy system. Got to mm-hmm. have somebody there with me.
Yeah.
You know, just to help because sometimes they're on their, they behave a little better when I've got somebody with me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And knowing that you have someone with you, you don't feel that I'm alone with them. So that's good.
Arranging physical care, you know, even when you're not actually involved in a personal relationship. Just even doing some of the legwork of figuring mm-hmm. out things. And, you know, I've worked with a couple of folks who, you know, figured out Meals on Wheels, figured out very basic needs, even though they couldn't themselves be in a relationship with the parent.
Yes. And I saw that personally as a social worker where, they would set up services, but you know, that's about that. And, you know, that's about all they would do, which was very good. It was still, you know, it was helping them. They were getting their
incredibly
needs met,
decent,
you know,
and kind and amazingly, mm-hmm. oftentimes people still feel guilty, you know? So,
yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've had that conversation. I remember one of my clients was saying, yeah, but society, they have such an emphasis on you need to take care of your parents or be there for your parents. And it's a tough one.
That's really, I always talk about, you really have to do the work of negotiating inside of yourself. You know, what do I need to do where I feel good about my role as a daughter, not for them, but for what that means to me, or as a son, what that means to me. What can I do? Mm-hmm. What can I not, you know, what can't I do, but what can I do? And if it's nothing, it's nothing. And that, you know, that's okay too, but just, you know, and then, and again, I get it. The culture doesn't necessarily get that or reinforce that. So you got to find folks, you got to find the support groups. There's a lot of stuff online right now where it's like, oh, I get it. And find those people who get it and who fill your cup. And so, you know, who can kind of, because it is, even in you know, their friends, your parents' friends, man, what's wrong with you? Why are you, you know, there's a lot of pressure without them knowing the full story of how this relationship has harmed you. So.
Yes. Yeah. And what are some ways that a person can start to heal from those father, mother wounds?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a chicken or egg question, because there's healing in the act of forging a different sort of relationship that feels right to you. Mm-hmm. And again, we're kind of, I'm giving some example, you know, a lot of people, there's things like, I'll just see my parents twice a year, you know, and when I'm with them, it's okay. And we just don't talk about these topics, right? There's that category too.
Or I'll see them for 5 minutes and then I'll
drop in once a week with a cup of coffee and that's it, you know, and we just don't talk about anything deep and it hurts me still. Okay. So then we're getting to that. Yeah. That makes me sad because I wish I wanted to stop by. I wish it brought me joy instead of kind of being this duty. And so there's the first part is kind of negotiating the new relationship that isn't the one you wanted, isn't the one you deserved, but it's what works. And then the reparenting, right? The reparenting. So understanding what you didn't get is part of it, but then what would it be like to have gotten? And there's just so many different angles. I'm sure, I know your work is amazing. You talk about so many different ways to do that, but that process of reparenting, of learning to reconnect to the parts of you that never got parented in the way they deserved. And I, you know, I can share with you some of my favorites, but it's just such a key part of the work.
Yeah, well, share. Please,
you know,
do.
I've mentioned the IFS model. I don't know how much you talk about it on, it's one of, you know, a trauma-informed therapy that I'm trained in and I like, but it's this idea of working with the young, what we call exiled parts of you, that you begin, and you can do this with a counselor, you can do this with a coach, where you begin to do things like write a love letter to the part of you. And what would you say to the 8-year-old, knowing what you know now, you know, what would you say to that 8-year-old? And it's just striking. You realize, oh my gosh, you know, what I didn't get. Sometimes having kids of your own and realizing, man, how I'm interacting with my kids, and then applying some of that toward what you wish you would have gotten. Sometimes that can be helpful. Asking other people for a witness, you know, could you, you know, I've got a few friends, I've cultivated these kinds of relationships with, say, you know, where I'll say, man, this 8-year-old part of me just needs a good cry. I don't need advice. I just need someone to be with me. Kind of learning to coach other people how to be with you.
Wow. Yeah. That's lovely. Especially that you can do that freely and safely with a friend. That's
been
really
a huge
beautiful
piece of it for me, is just finding folks that are out there. You know, they're out there. Thanks to people like you. Thanks to people getting these ideas into the world. There's more folks than you imagine. And you can create these little safe pods, you know, where you kind of use some of this language. And it's just very life-giving. You're learning how to nurture yourself, but you're also learning how to help the people who love you give you what you need too.
Yes. Oh, I just, I just love that. I love that so much. And, you know, I find I have some really very safe friends, and they, when I'm in their presence, they just, their presence offers like this feeling of welcome and safety, yes. just nervous system to nervous system. And there's the adult me that loves it, but yes. I know there's this younger part that's like, oh, I'm just loving being here, you know? And it's, I think it's really healing those wounds from the past in the present yes. with these they safe know. Friendships.
Those parts of you sense it. Like you said, in the nervous system, yeah. they have, there's a sense of release. There's a sense of freedom. You might laugh a little harder yeah. or cry a little longer, you know, because there's that sense of release that those parts just never really had. They've been locked away.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Wow. So how would you deal with your own guilt about how you feel? Like, let's say mm-hmm. you feel these feelings, mm-hmm. but you feel guilty about having them towards your parents. What would you suggest?
It's a really tricky emotion. And I always really try to be clear. It's an emotion, which means it just is. So because you feel guilt does not mean you are guilty. you know, and sometimes you can
feel
sometimes That's you so feel good. Guilt after you've yeah. done something really right and really brave. And so just really mm-hmm. guilt is just something we have to pay attention to and get curious about. Okay, so I feel guilty. Do I feel guilty because I've done something different than what I usually do? Did I actually hurt somebody? You have to do a lot of the reality testing. Is somebody actually hurt? And maybe they are, but then again, but are they hurt because I did something wrong? Or are they hurt because I just did something different? I changed mm-hmm. I decided to engage differently. And that can bring an avalanche of guilt when you start to change things in your relationship. So you just got to be aware and hold on, you know, hold on for the ride and be like, oh, that's guilt. It doesn't mean I did something wrong. And you might overcorrect, you know, there are times when you do overcorrect and you like lose it on somebody and you scream at them and then maybe you feel guilty, but you kind of know in your system, like, you know, I probably shouldn't have lost it. Okay. I can apologize for that piece of it. But so often guilt is more of this like nagging. I just, am I allowed to do that? Did I, you know, sort of like almost like, do I have permission, you know, to actually show up differently in this relationship? So you really got to get to know how it shows up in your body. So even, for example, I'll notice like real guilt when I've really done something wrong is real clear. I just feel it right in my gut. I'm like, oh, oops. mm-hmm. Sorry, you know, sorry, mm-hmm. husband, sorry, child. You know, there's just not a lot of chaos with it. The sort of guilt that comes from more of this hypervigilant codependence is really kind of, it's always foggy. It's not really clear. It's more a little bit laced with shame. I'm a bad person. And I've learned to recognize it shows up differently. It just shows up differently. Yeah,
it really does. I just love the way you explain that. It's like you feel it. It's like an instant feeling. And then you're right. The other one feels just so, and it's like long and heavy and.
And that's a cue to go, did I actually do something wrong? Or did I just do something that makes me feel uncomfortable because it was brave and because I'm changing something?
Hmm. Yeah, right. So how do we break the cycle with our own children?
that's a great question. And again, that can be part of the healing. Because as you start to heal and you start to figure out the healthier boundaries, you start to recognize false guilt, which is another, you know, I like to different the false guilt versus true guilt. And you realize, oh, that's false guilt. I don't have to pay attention to that. I can care for myself through that. All of that brings you into this healthier emotional space where you're going to be healthier as a parent yourself, which is extremely rewarding. So just even doing the kinds of things we've talked about, first of all, is just so amazing. And you're bringing more healing, more goodness into the world, you know? And then it is going to trickle down to your own kids. And then you just start to think about how can it can be very empowering. It can be very freeing to be like, how can I do things differently? How can I show up for my kids? I don't want to be perfect. I'm not going to be perfect, but how can I show up for them differently? And maybe pick one or two things. So for example, a big one for me was I'm going to apologize when I've done something wrong. I'm going to own it. That's been a big one for me as a parent to kind of change cycles. And it's hard, you know, but to go back and be like, you know what, I was wrong on that. And I'm really sorry. You know, that's when I've tried to change for my own sake. It's also good for my kids, you know? Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. And, you know, it's I'm listening to it because like, we could never imagine that happening. Unfortunately, like with our own parents saying, oh, I'm sorry. You know? But boy, what it teaches them, you know, it's great. It teaches them that nobody's perfect, that we make mistakes, that we're human.
Another big one I say is always, I don't know, you know, because another one, you know, a lot of times with parents that have extreme ideas and principles and there's no room for questioning or curiosity. And so another one with my kids, they'll ask a question. I'm like, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. Let's talk about it together. What do you think? Here's some of the thoughts I have. What do you think? You know, it's a big one. What do you think? You know, just trying to invite them into my goodness. The conversation. Cause what would that have been like to have that as a kid?
To be asked what we think? My goodness.
I actually value hearing your thoughts, you know? Yeah.
Oh, that's so lovely. That's so lovely. And again, you know, we talk a lot about the patterns that we've learned, but can you imagine if that becomes a pattern that they learn?
Exactly. As they go into the world, there are people who can own it when they make a mistake and also just ask, be curious about other people. I'd like to get to know what you think. Here's what I think, you know?
I love that. I love that. Wow, this has been so great. So before we end, is there anything else that you would want to add to this conversation?
Gosh, it's just a lot of ground to cover. So just mostly just that this, we kind of scratched the tip of the iceberg. These are hard topics. But just the key principles, knowing that this is really important. I think it's important to look back and look for where you were parentified. You know, where some of these things occurred. Again, not necessarily to lay blame, but to set yourself free.
Yes. Yeah. Good. So, Allison, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they reach you?
I am on socials. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. It's Allison Cook PhD is my handle. And then I send out a weekly blog on Thursdays that just on a lot of topics. Like today's was, you know, if I say no and hurt someone, does that make me a bad person? You know, I'm just trying to kind of hit some of these, a lot of stuff on parent, you know, these topics just to try to help tease these out. So I'd love for people to find me. I also have sort of a subspecialty where I deal, I talk a lot with folks who've been hurt by faith communities, which is also my context. So I, you know, if you find me, you'll see some of that faith language, which may or may not appeal to you, but that's another area of interest of mine. So if folks are interested, if they've been hurt by church communities or that kind of thing, that's also another area where I do blog about those kinds of topics as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for having me.
I appreciate it.
What can trauma recovery coaching offer? It can offer a safe place to feel supported and encouraged. You'll also learn about your nervous system and how to feel more regulated through the practice of somatic tools to regulate your nervous system. You'll learn the importance of boundaries, and you will learn about inner child work, self-compassion, how to deal with those feelings of stuckness, and so much more. To find out more about my trauma recovery coaching options, you can reach me on my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. You can also visit me on Instagram and Facebook at cptsdcoach.